James, why the squeeze on Russia? What are they trying to do?
Well, I think that, let me back up a little bit here.
All right.
You know, there's basically a three-way waltz that's been going on for a long time between the U.S., Russia, and China. Our policy has always been to try and keep those two divided. And we play one off against the other. And, you know, the Chinese were very much on our side in breaking the Soviets in the 1980s. They helped us out tremendously in Afghanistan,
yes,
making life miserable for the Russians there. What our policy has always been is to avoid them getting together some way and combining their efforts. But before I wrote the book, in chatting with some people in our national security establishment, they said, you know, sooner or later we figure the Russians are going to get back together with the Chinese. It's birds of a feather flocking together. Ultimately, the guys, the kleptocrats and the Kremlin, are going to feel more comfortable with the, you know, communist elite in Beijing than they are with free market Western European crowd. So that's the way they figure they're going to gravitate. And in fact, you know, the Russians are in an extremely vulnerable position. In fact, part of the reason I think that we helped prices run up from 98 until this year was to actually help the Russians get stronger against the Chinese. You know, the Russians are extremely vulnerable to China in Siberia. The Chinese still have massive land claims on large swaths of Siberia. And in fact, in 2006, the Chinese actually staged large-scale land military maneuvers designed specifically to show the Russians, look, we can move a large army a long distance, defeat an emplaced army. The point there is,
yeah,
the Chinese could take Siberia. The Russians wouldn't have a chance to defend it, really, without going nuclear. And I think the Russians, I mean, they're outnumbered 100-1 across the border there. Chinese have already infiltrated large portions of, it's kind of a Finlandization going on of Siberia.
So, and would they go nuclear to defend?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think they would. I think they would just, they'd have to cave. The Chinese would be able to take Siberia by default. And so what you've seen is Putin, I think, has had to juggle the relationship with the West and at the same time make nice with the Chinese. And what you've seen over the last couple of years is a whole series of, I mean, it was like shuttle diplomacy to Beijing. He made a number of trips there. Part of our effort, I think, was to try to keep the Russians from selling too much oil to China. And particularly, we've leaned on them to slow down the development of a large pipeline that was being built across Siberia. It would come down into the Chinese refining center in Daqing. We've managed, I think, to get them to slow that down for a decade or more. But now I think that to make peace with the Chinese in the last few months, Russians decided we're going to go ahead with that line. We're going to increase the capacity.
Yeah.
Until now, the Russians have been selling modest amounts of crude into China, but it's all by railroad car, which is the slowest
way you can go
to move this stuff.
Yeah.
And you can always turn off that spigot without leaving a big unused pipe in the ground.
That's right.
Tens of billions of dollars. So it's that pipeline. Again, these pipeline politics are crucial in this game. And I think the Russians are moving in the direction of realigning with China. In fact, in the last couple of weeks, they've announced renewed top-level military cooperation, hot lines back and forth between the countries. They're definitely realigning against the U.S. and the West. So that, in a situation like that, there's no reason we're going to keep subsidizing these people with high oil prices. And what you find is that oil is a much more potent weapon against the Russians. Low prices are a much more potent weapon against the Russians than high prices are against the Chinese. And I can explain it to you later.
Yeah, yeah.
But
one
thing, one number I need to give you right now for my long-suffering, malnourished publisher. let me give you the...
Who will become an instant millionaire over the next week because of this program.
I hope so. He deserves it, frankly. It's a little outfit out of Oregon called Trine Day. And their 800 number is 800-556-2012. I think he himself is going to be there answering the phone tonight in case anybody calls.
Well, first of all, it's a great book, and I guarantee you, James, over the course of the next week or so, after this program, you're going to start getting calls from some of the mainstream network television folks, and you'll be on your merry way to explain this. But you've got a great message, and that's why you're on the show tonight. This is a great story.
Well, it is. I'm surprised other people haven't picked up on it. I mean, I'm no rocket scientist. It's plain as day to me. But I think there are elements of the story that was just too politically sensitive to deal with here. I mean, it.
So we run the oil prices up to help the Russians a little bit. Now, who's also profiting, though? The oil companies are making a fortune while that's going on. Exxon reporting record profits. All of them are happy. They're all jumping up and down. Americans are getting hurt. The car industry then starts to suffer. And then all of a sudden the housing collapse occurs and the bottom falls out. Was all that planned too?
No. Well, what I think is it's like tinkering with the weather. You know, it's not nice to mess with Mother Nature. There's all kind of unintended consequences from all of this stuff. And I think
Something happened. It's just, I don't believe in coincidences, James, at all. I think things happen for a reason. And with all this going on at the same time, it's just too weird for me to comprehend.
It is. I agree. And part of the reason I wrote this book is to just get people to think in terms of the possibility and the reality of economic warfare. That's how wars get fought now. And it's a completely different kind of warfare than people imagine. It goes on over long periods of time. It can be, it's like attrition warfare, though. I mean, it's like scorched earth. There's lots of collateral damage, unintended consequences. But it can be even more intense than actual combat in terms of the amount of money deployed and the effects of it. Now, I'm looking just at the oil side of it because that's what I'm familiar with. But you have to wonder, if it goes on in oil, a global fungible commodity like crude oil, what other things have we been monkeying with? I mean, you look at the outrageous run-up in iron ore prices, and, you know, the whole credit collapse, you have, I don't get into this in the book, but you have to wonder, if you can control the supply and the pricing of a commodity like crude, what if you could control the supply and pricing of a commodity like credit?
Yep.
I mean, it boggles the mind what you could do. You know, so I think that it helps to understand what's going on here in the context that there could be economic warfare going on. Now, whether all this stuff is actually planned or whether it's just a circumstance that various countries are going to try and take advantage of, who knows? Who knows who's doing what to whom here? But I'm with you. I agree. There's something. This is too perfect a storm that we've been through in this past year.